1 month ago today, Salvadoran President Antonio Saca was scheduled to announce his government's plans for privatizing municipal water systems in the small town of Suchitoto. Hundreds of activists converged there, and 13 protesters were arrested. What happened next has sparked weeks of controversy. Maifil, Food and Water Watch, has stayed with us to discuss the Suchitoto 13, along with Mike Ring, the former director of U.S. El Salvador's sister cities, who's currently in El Salvador. And I'm very pleased to welcome them both to Underreported. Hello. So, Mike, what happened on July 2nd?
First of all, I want to thank you for covering the story on this program, which is very appropriate given it's very underreported story in the States.
Well, actually, I haven't seen it at all in newspapers here, and I was wondering about coverage in El Salvador.
There is significant coverage of the story in El Salvador, though depending on your source of information, the angle of how it's presented is quite different. But it is definitely a topic of national debate here and a transcendent issue, which maybe if I explain a little bit about what happened, folks might understand why. Some of the context that's important to understand is that President Antonio Saca, as you mentioned, was going to Suchitoto on July 2nd to announce his project. It's important to note that President Saca is president also of the Arena Party, which is the ruling party in El Salvador and has been since the peace agreement were signed here in 1992. It's a party that was linked to the most violent death squads in the country and has a long history of repression against the local population. And Saca chose to announce his decentralization program in Suchitoto, which, to the contrary of his party, is a place that has a long history of resistance to the government and to the previous military dictatorship that ruled the country for 60 years. So these are folks who were war refugees. They had had to flee the country. They had been greatly repressed. And they spent the last 15 years coming back to their home communities, rebuilding the communities, including building their own water systems with their own efforts, their own sweat equity, and the support of international solidarity groups and aid organizations. And then President Saca decides to come out in that particular town and announce a project that would basically take away the water resources that these communities had administered themselves, built themselves, and turn them over to private agencies and contracting with the central government.
And why do you think he did that? Was he being provocative?
Absolutely. I think he was being provocative. I think that the government's intent is twofold. One is the government has followed here since their taking power in 1989 a model of privatizing basically every sector of the economy that they could and turning El Salvador into a country that's really run by the financial elite of the country, where the banks and the control of economic resources have even further consolidated this country's wealth and inequality. So part of that is just a continuing of that whole social program, which has affected, as your other guests had mentioned, areas like electricity and telecommunications and other strategic resources in the country. The other part of it is that this government has never been tolerant of any form of social protest. It's a government that you know, during the war, its founder, Roberto Dawison, was linked to the death squads and the killing of the archbishop. It's a party that's founded on violence against protesters. And during the peace period, it was forced, due to international observation by the United Nations and international human rights groups, to learn to respect social protest. And that was a major part of the peace agreement that was signed here. And one of the few real solid achievements was the ability of people to protest and express themselves democratically without fear of being captured, of being tortured, of being, taken away from their families. This government, very recently in the last year, has tried to wave a new strategy of legal repression by passing laws, very much modeled on the U.S. laws of anti-terrorism measures, that attempt to criminalize protest. And it's under those new laws that the people who were protesting the president's arrival to Suchitoto and his attempt to present his privatization plan, that these people were arrested. They were attacked by the police. Some of them were taken up in helicopters over a nearby lake and threatened to be thrown out over the lake. And then they were, they were taken away into the legal system and placed in front of what many of us in the States would refer to as a kangaroo court that was set up and through a November law that is currently being challenged for its constitutionality.
Mike, I want to tell people that I'm talking with Mike Ring, former director of U.S. El Salvador Sister Cities. He's talking to us from San Salvador, the capital of El Salvador. And also with us is Maifil, Food and Water Watch, who stayed on with us to discuss the Suchitoto 13. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. So Mike is suggesting that these protests are about a lot more than water rights. They're part of a broader political and social unrest situation in El Salvador.
Yeah, and I think Mike described that fairly accurately, what's going on. This is sort of just one of the latest things that happened, and the international community has reacted very strongly to this. In fact, there was a letter that was sent by 46 Congress members here in the U.S. to Condoleezza Rice to address this issue of repression of public dissent.
But do you think that the fact that CAFTA, the Central American Free Trade Agreement, is also an issue here, might be playing a role in the way the United States government will react?
Yeah, it's likely to play a role. I mean, I see this water privatization as sort of just one in a long string of changes in El Salvador that leads to protest and that does not take into account what the majority of the people really need.
Mike, initially 14 people were arrested. Only 13 were detained. Who were the 13 protesters that were sent to jail?
The protesters were a combination of local campesinos who had, again, they're very well organized people. They've survived many difficult situations by working together, and they're also very experienced in organizing to make their voices heard. So they came out, the local communities organized and said, "We want our voice heard on this issue about the water situation, especially with the president coming to our town."
But also, weren't there journalists? Weren't there journalists arrested?
Yes. Then there was four people who came from the national office of an organization with which these communities are affiliated. There's 300 communities who are poor rural communities that are affiliated in a peasant federation called CREPDES. It's the Association for Development of El Salvador. And among the four from that office who were arrested when they were traveling in a car, a pickup truck, to the protest. You can actually see this on YouTube if you type in CREPDES. And the police pulled them over several miles before they even had gotten to the protest, stopped the car, pulled out the driver, pulled out the president and the vice president of the organization, and a journalist who was traveling with them to cover the protest.
How free is El Salvador's press?
Well, I mean, I think, like I said before, you know, since the peace agreement, there has been an opening of public space and dissent here. During the war, which I happened to spend some time here during the war, you really couldn't say anything in a public space that was differing from the government's point of view. Certainly that's changed greatly in the post-war period, and you can hear all forms of opinion. It's worth noting, however, that the press that's affiliated with the government, that has very close financial and personal links to the governing body, is the largest force in the country in terms of communications. It owns three major television stations. It owns all the major newspapers. And so that is the dominant voice in the public debate in terms of the media.
Now, Maya, you said members of Congress have protested this situation. Do you think that international pressure has helped the case of the 13 who were arrested?
I think so. It was very interesting because I was part of a group of U.S. solidarity groups who met with the ambassador, the El Salvadoran ambassador to the U.S. here in Washington, D.C., and 2 days after the detainees were actually released in El Salvador. So I think, you know, they are listening to this, and what we were told by the ambassador is that he does expect that the law is going to change, but that doesn't change the fact that the police is still being very aggressive towards any type of dissent in the country.
Now, when you say the law will be changed, are we talking about the special law against acts of terrorism, which was passed in October 2006 and some people say was modeled on the U.S. Patriot Act?
Yeah, and as Mike said, there's been issues around whether that's constitutional in El Salvador, some of the provisions in the law. So I take that what the ambassador are telling us.
Well, Mike, what do you think is going to happen? Charges have still been made against this 13. Do you think that they'll be brought to trial?
I do think they probably will go to trial. I think it'd be very difficult for the government at this point to completely drop the case without it at least going to trial. Referring back to your earlier question and to my response, I really agree with her that this case, its definition is really much more about the political situation both here and internationally. And I think that the government overstepped. It thought that it could take a very harsh action and apply this terrorism law to its protesters. And instead, it found that the international community still does pay attention to El Salvador, and that many Salvadorans here in the country still are very concerned about their right to constitutionally express themselves. And there's been a groundswell of support here on this case and activism that hasn't been seen in many years. So I do think that as long as that support continues and that people's spirit of defending the right of human beings to express their opinion is protected, that eventually the charges will be dropped. But I do think the government will take the case to court, because politically it would look very bad for them to have charged these people and then not even take the case to the courts, which they were the ones who pushed for them to be set up last November.
My considering that the international community has responded strongly to this, are you surprised that the American press has pretty much ignored this?
I think these issues are generally something that actually gets ignored by the American press. El Salvador is not alone in repressing protests around this particular issue, around water, or for that matter, social dissent in general. Right now, in fact, we have a water activist who's been jailed in Mexico and still is in jail, and it hasn't received the same attention despite international outrage. So it's something that we continue to see all across the world when it comes to the privatization of water and people's popular protests. So unfortunately, it's something that generally gets ignored. And I'm very happy that the U.S. Congress actually responded in this case. There needs to be stronger responses in general.
Do you think, Mike, that El Salvador may be moving toward a more democratic approach? Could this be a turning point?
I hope so. I mean, I think it's we're very much in that phase of gray area where the government wanted to push back. The people, organized people, both here and abroad, have pushed back and said no. You know, one thing that the war was fought for was for the right of people to speak out, and so I think this could be a turning point. But it really depends on how this all plays out from here. The victory of having people released is an important victory, but a partial one, and so. I think it's very important that people continue to speak out, especially, the United States has a very specific role in this country. I agree with Mai that the U.S. has influence throughout the region. El Salvador has a unique relationship with the U.S. with several hundred people fleeing here every day as economic refugees to go to the States. It has a dollarized economy. There is no local monetary system. Several years ago, an agreement with the government here and the U.S. government led to the dollar being the currency here. We know about CAFTA, as you mentioned before. So there's a very unique relationship between these two countries, and it is important for people in the United States to understand the influence their government has in El Salvador.
My thanks to both of you for participating in today's Underreported. Mike Ring, the former director of U.S. El Salvador Sister Cities, talking to us from San Salvador, and from Washington, Mai Feel of Food and Water Watch. It's been quite illuminating. Thank you so
Thanks
much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Leonard.
Take care now. Thank you for having us. Bye-bye.